Thursday and welcome to the Tea and Trails podcast. Just like last year, we thought we'd get the show out a day early ahead of the Lakeland 50 and Lakeland 100. So thanks so much for joining us. And if you are towing the line this weekend, and fingers crossed, we are a welcome distraction from all the shenanigans. Thanks to our patrons and partners too. We've got Mountainview, Outdoor Active, Velaforte, Silver, Active Route, The Centurion Running Store, Protein Rebel, SportsShoes.com, Big Bobble Hats, X Miles, Orm, and Thornside Farm Cottages. Pop over to Patreon and check them out. If you are still on the fence, then listen to this. Pause for effect. Oh, it's a big fat yes.
What the hell?
Oh, it's a big fat yes from me. Trench, Protein Rebel, Centurion Running Store, Sport Shoes, Need I Go On. So appreciated, and for the cost of a cuppa a month. Value right there. 2 exclamation marks. Not my words. Those are the words of the lovely Susan Chambers. Susan is crushing it over on Patreon. And I'll see Susan at the start line of the Lake 100 along with her partner, Jamie. And also X Miles reached out just to say thanks to all of our listeners who have been using their discount code. So yeah, that was lovely. Finally, pop over to Summit Crazy if you would like some awesome Tea and Trails merch. That was probably the most amount of intro admin.
There was a Tea and Trails buff on the top of the podium at the race I did at the weekend.
Oh,
and it wasn't me.
That is amazing.
How cool is that?
Well, yeah, I was talking to the Summit Crazy people, actually. That it's just wild when we see people out and about with hoodies on and buffs. And she said, yeah, I still get goosebumps when she sees somebody in a Summit Crazy t-shirt. So, yeah, that is wonderful.
Bryn just does this. I'm signaling my head going, getting bigger. But come on, cut me some slack. Episode 32. This week we chat with David Parrish. David Parrish, winner of the Cape Wrap Ultra. What a treat. Anyone not sure about doing something mega like Cape Wrap, throwing themselves into a big challenge? Take a listen. What a guy. Reassuring, like confident, but reassuring. And shows that there's not one way to approach a race. Often, Gary, I hope you took this on board, it's all about the admin, not about the gels.
Very calm, wasn't he too? Very calm.
I've been busy sweating up and down a mountain. Yeah. Gary is in the midst of taper madness. Is he mad or is he as cool as a cucumber? Let's find out. How are you feeling, buddy?
Well, I'm very busy at work, so I'm not really thinking about the race yet.
Do you know how many people say to me, Gary talks about work. What is this work that he does?
What does
and
he
I say,
do?
I don't know. I don't know what my husband does. Like they just these men, they just go off.
What does he do? Yeah,
but you don't need to dull. Share it. Yeah,
no, it's very boring. It's very boring. But it's been very dull. Which, to be honest, that's probably exactly what I want. I did one strength session, just body weight and light weights, nothing too spectacular, a bit of mobility too, some foam rolling, some easy miles with strides. I did do that 3x8 session in the nature reserve, Castling Dean, which I really enjoyed. And that huge 5-minute recovery makes
practically
it really...
like you must have like needed to put a coat on.
It was great, yeah. And, you know, because sometimes I've done these efforts and I've either underfueled, so I've never really got my heart rate into that zone 4. I've not had enough in the tank. But, yeah, I did fuel correctly. And with a 5 minutes recovery, that was super easy. It was high risk, I was thinking, as I was doing it, because sort of the nature reserve, it's not really a technical trail, but you're going down some quite steep descents. And I thought, I don't want to twist an ankle like the week before the Lake 100. So it was high risk, but did it and we got away with it and I felt strong. I ordered some because I've been, Rena McGregor's influenced me.
Oh, she's influenced the world, I think. Who hasn't sucked a boiled sweet or bought some peanut M&Ms?
I bought some boiled sweets too from the lakes. I'm such a sad case. But yeah, I bought some of the cherry active that she mentioned. So I'll be giving that a go. I went back to episode whatever it was. It's really strange listening back to the podcast with us on it. It's a real kind of bizarre experience. But yeah, listen back. Yeah, got some of the cherry active. So hopefully that will help. The highlight of the week running wise was the 12 miles on the Lakeland 100 route. Super easy from the Blencathrone Centre. We just ran 6 miles and then turned around and came back. And my pace was, the deets are, was 11, 23 minute mile, which is over 2 minutes a mile faster than...
Why were you walking?
And I said last week, I'm not too sure.
You could have seen Gary's face then. He was like, What? Doing really well, Eddie.
Yeah, I thought I was flying. But I said last week, I'm not too sure what I can take away from this. It was only an 18-mile run last week. It was an 18-mile run last week. But what I can take away, see, if I did that run and my pace was 15-minute mile, and then it's a big red flag that any hopes for a sub-24-hour Lakeland 100 were not on the cards. So fingers crossed, that is a good sign. No coffee. So that was good. I got a few messages about too much
oversharing. Oh, I got some messages too.
Yeah, so we'll rein that in the future. Sorry, people. Yes. I saw Sabrina Vergee. She was out on the course too. Pretty sure she's doing the 100, maybe the 50, but I think she's doing the 100 this year. And I wondered, was she doing the same recce as that we were doing? And if she was, I thought, well, if it's good enough for Sabrina, it's good enough for me too. No running Sunday, which was nice. Now we have rest days. It's great. I love this tape time. No running, but I did do quite a lot of walking, recs. My heart rate variability is balanced, which is good as you're going into race week. So I'll take that. And I've done some hardcore, clutching the straws really, but hardcore race 100 prep. I chopped the handle off my mug to make it like a gram lighter, which is pretty sad. I'm thinking like literally because I've never really controlled my eating all year. So I'm trying to trim the fat off my kit as opposed to trim the fat off me. And I re-waterproofed my jacket out of this packet of that, what's it called? Nicky Wax, that brand?
What, yeah, you Nick Wax, not Nicky
Nick Wax. Yes, Nicky Wax. Anyway, yes, I've re-waterproofed my jacket. I thought, well, why not give that a go? Yeah. So I've done that and that, yeah, that is me for the week, I think. Yeah, okay.
Are you traveling down?
Jumping in the car with Neil on Thursday, Neil and his wife Lisa on Thursday, and we're driving over. I can't believe there was a spare bed in the youth hostel, but I got the last bed in Coniston Youth Hostel. So I'm spending the night Coniston and then checking in or doing the kit check Friday morning. And I'm going to pitch a tent in the field and just sleep Friday.
Yeah, because I guess you just chill out until the start, won't you?
So yeah, travel over Thursday. I'm not too sure of the time yet. So yeah, I think that's a pretty good week. The week before the race, I'm happy with that. My week was pretty dull. You've had two races or one race? What does it count as?
Two races, because they're not actually, I didn't actually even find out. I kept myself completely distanced from any results races because it wasn't on the cards. So I better just, like we said, just not even, practically didn't even want to put the bib on, bib number on. Woof, what a week. I'm just having a come down today. It's, where are we, Tuesday? And I've just hung up the race laundry. So I'm behind, massively behind. So I had a quiet start to the week. I was in Wales at mum and dad's house and with the kids by myself. We had a lovely time. Weather was Welsh. I did a few early morning, like 45 minute, 60 minute runs. That was all I planned to do. That's all I had the time to do. Didn't do any sessions. What I did do was I just did a little bit like within those runs. I did a sort of like little progressive element, or I was like, there's a quite long hill back up from the sea. So I was like, oh, it's going to be like, I'm going to do
did
like
you get
a 15
your segment?
Minute. Yeah, I got my segment.
Last year.
Yeah, got my segment. And I was like, so I didn't give it full well. I might have just, you know, given it a little sweat on. So I had a few runs like that. So my aim was to do about 20 miles and about 10 miles walking before we had these two local races that are in the little village next to us. And my main aim actually of the weekend was to look after Bryn and get Bryn round and give him some confidence. He's done a race. We'd done a relay race together a few years ago. That must have been the last time, but that was a long time ago. His last really big race was Dragon's Back. The reason we decided to do a race was, one, it was just, it's local. It means we're going to do it. You know, putting on a bib, even though we're not racing, still gives you a little bit of nervous anticipation. Yeah, you've got to you've got to deal with what you've got on course. You are going to go a little bit faster than an easy run. And even though it's like local trails, I've run all these trails, skied all these trails loads of times, you know, put them in a race and it's like almost running a different path. So it's a bit of motivation as well. So
in your training is a good thing to chuck in.
As long as you can. Right. We'll talk about this now. So the deets of the race. So I flew back with the kids by myself on Friday. Mum and dad live in the bottom of Wales, so it's an all-day journey, three-hour car journey. Then to the airport, Bristol Airport. That's a dive. The kids have never seen hen and stag parties at 11 o'clock on a Friday morning. Mum, what are they doing? But my kids are pro travellers. They're so good at like, we've never given them, mainly because we've got three kids, so we can't afford three iPads. I've never given them screens when they're travelling. So I think they're a bit more engaged, mainly because they're bored of what's going on and what they're doing. So I reckon they pretty much could travel by themselves now. We got on the aeroplane and they all sat in a row together and they didn't want to sit with me. So I sat by myself and then no one sat next to me. That never That's happens. Oh, so I said to them, who wants to come and sit with Mum? Nobody. Do you know what I did? I listened to our podcast with Andy Berry and I really enjoyed it. I never have time to do that. So I thought, I'll do a quick
edit. I can't believe your kids will sit together.
They love it. They work out. I have snacks. They choose a book. Evie has a sticker book. I literally could have been by myself. I didn't even really talk to them. It was great. I treated myself. I bought a Tatler magazine. I don't think I've ever read Tatler magazine because I wanted to read it. It was all about the British tennis players. I thought, that'd be quite interesting.
It's not on my roster, that one.
No, it's not normally on my roster, but I did enjoy finding out so-and-so's wedding and their country manner. So yeah, we traveled back, but we didn't get home. Then we were going to drive up the mountain, so we didn't get home till like 8 o'clock at night, travel weary, and immediately we got home, started mixing up tailwind to leave the next morning and sorting the logistics of the kids. Luckily we had Jason and Kim Cavill who were house sitting for us, and Kim was going to do the same as us. She's training for UTMB, so she was going to do, so our first race was called Dufay de Mon Cheri, which is like the dare, the challenge basically, and it was you had 4 hours and you did as many ups to the top of Mon Cheri you could, and then you got the telly cabin back down again. And I'm not sure the exact I think it's a mile at 366 meters. It's basically up what is the red ski piece down. So yeah. I've skied up and down it hundreds of times, but now it's a mountain bike track. So it's quite, some bits were grassy, some bits were quite sandy and slippy, some bits were rooty, but that was quite nice. And it's broken up by the switchback road. So you could sort of break it up into different bits, which is what Bryn and I did.
Elevation for distance was crazy.
Crazy. And I tell you what, when you've done like 2 laps and you're like, oh Lord, we've only been going an hour. But then the next day we had 42K with it actually ended up being almost identical elevation, near on 3,000 meters the next day as well. And that started at 7 a.m. So this one started at 9 a.m., finished at 1, and then the next one started. So it wasn't a ton of time, especially when the kids want to go to the lake afterwards. The recovery was not a start in between. So I kind of thought, I'd heard like a friend had done it a year before, and I sort of thought, I reckon the winning men will do 9 laps, the winning women will do 8 laps. So I thought between 6 and 7 would be a good we want it to be a little bit of an effort. We want to tire ourselves out basically for the next day. That was the point. But we also don't want to, was really mindful of not getting too hot and recreating the South Downs Way of Leger Trail. We set off quite near, and what's interesting, we set off quite near the back. There were about 100 people, so it's very small. And that was a little bit to our detriment in that it's very narrow. So we were kind of waiting at the top. And then also Bryn was like, we're going to queue for the telecabin to come back down. And there's only one telecabin, like every kind of, maybe like 45 seconds. So if you miss that one, you kind of lost a minute without by just standing there. So we probably I didn't let him. We started and I thought it was behind me, and then I suddenly saw him ahead of me, so I had to catch him up. So we definitely gave beans to the first one, and then we sort of settled down into like a good pace. So I had my heart rate monitor on and I said, Bryn, I'm not going over 150 heart rate, basically. To be fair, I didn't really actually look at it during
the race.
High,
I would, for me, that would be really, that's quite high.
No, that's like my steady
okay.
effort, basically. So first lap, good. Bryn was good. He was strong. Up we go. Went down, got intake. I'm full of other people. We're chatting away. So it was fast. It was 22 minutes to the top, the first one. I was like, Bryn, that's probably two minutes we could be slower and still manage. We would be doing 8 laps if we went that pace. And I was like, So second lap. Then the second lap, the last bit was really, really steep, up the steepest part of the red. I love a steep climb. It's my this is the reason I have butt cheeks, Gary, that I can give it some up a steep climb with my poles. And I went up and I, of course, people are going, first lady, second lady, third lady, and they were like, second lady's just ahead, and I went, da-da. So I caught up behind her. Bryn's
probably thinking, what?
Wait, this is good. Bryn had a blue t-shirt on. Unfortunately, all the people and the volunteers of the race were in identical color of the blue t-shirt. So I would look behind and go, I think, oh, there's Bryn. And then be like, oh, there's three Bryns. No, which one's Bryn? Oh, my gosh. Anyway, caught up with this lady and jumped into the telecabin thinking Bryn was just behind me. And I was like, he'll just get the next telecabin. A little rest from me might not be so bad. And then my friend had brought the kids up the mountain and she was on our trail running WhatsApp. And she was like, he's three telecabins behind you. And I was like, oh, no.
I got told off big time.
So I was like, had a word with myself. I was like, Eddie, what is the point of this weekend? This is not about you. This is a truly terrible thing that you're doing now, is that you've put your racing cap on and I love a race so much. I wanted to go in that pain cave so bad. It's a team. And so we got down to the bottom, and actually Bryn, then we set off, and within like a minute, he was pretty close behind me as well. And he, being Bryn, and the amazing guy, he was like, if you want to go on, just go on. And there was a pause when I was like, do you remember Michael Burke 999 when they was like, this is where the family made the big decision? And I was like, this is Eddie, one of those moments when you've got the devil on one shoulder and God on the other shoulder saying, you could do the right thing here, or you could do the thing that you want most. Or you could, you know, the instant gratification, the thing that's going to go, look how strong Eddie is. Okay. Or you could do the right thing and work with your husband and look after each other and enjoy the day and do what you said you were going to do, rather than being an absolute total dickhead.
And if this was like Love Island, there'd be a pause now and then we'd find out.
And then you'd see the future. Anyway, so of course, I did the love thing. I chose the love route and I was like, this is not what I'm... So, I was like, but it was really good that happened, that I like the temptation. This is a... Ooh, ooh, and then I was like, no, because I think that's actually really good for Tot Drett as well, because I could draw myself back and go, this is not what it's about. You could do eight laps. You could do nine laps. You could be in the... But this is not what it's about. It's about Bryn and I having some time together, showing the kids, you know, mom and dad doing something super cool together. Imagine the kids if I just left dad as well. They'd be like, but you said you're going to do it together. Oh my God, all these things. Anyway, do not worry. I didn't. But it was a very good lesson for me to be like, yeah. And also to show amazing. Bryn was just like, I don't care, just go ahead. We reinvented ourselves back as Equipe Saturn, as we became known on the loudspeaker every time we went through. So we did well. And then Bryn paid, he called himself the domestique. We did another, we got to like lap five. It started to get really hot. It's exposed, because it's just on a piece, a lot of it, and I got a bit of a panic. I was like, I'm getting really hot. I'm getting really hot. I don't want to end up under a bush again. I don't want to be sick again. And so Bryn got, he was like, right, water on the wrists, water down the neck. We sprayed it like deodorant under the armpits. Yeah. And he's like, just go real slow up this one. Let's get cool again, and we'll go again. So he has his uses, good old Bryn. That was really great. That was like, yes, what a team. Kids were at the top, so we saw them at the top. Finley was in charge of Vila Forte, shot gels, water, replacing electrolyte. Evie was in charge of colouring books. Rory had a football.
Just sounds like a magical day on the trails.
So we did seven laps, really quite comfortably. We still had 25 minutes to go. We could have done an eight, but it would have mean putting that heart rate up. Like literally would have had to go into the red to do an eight. So we were quite happy to stop at the top. The guy at the top was funny, because he's like, you haven't stopped once. I've got all this food. You've paid for your entry. Come on, let's go for it. What do you want? So we gorged on watermelon and chilled out and took the telecabin back down. But that was, so I don't know the distance. Yeah. So anyway, the climbing was 8,600 or something feet.
Yeah,
three hours 35, I think it was, when we stopped. Kids came down and it was hot by then. And so we went home. Kim did really well too. She did seven laps too. So next day, much bigger race. This is a big local trail race. I reckon a good 300, 400 people in it at the start. Technical, some really technical downhills, some long uphills, lots going on. Very hard when you've done something the day before to stand on. If anyone's done any of these like local trail races over in France, they are fast and furious from the off. They take no prisoners, especially some of the descending as well. And so I've never started right at the back of a race before either. So we started not quite at the back, but very near the back. And it was really nice to not have to go out at a 169 heart rate and to kind of like, well, we're just going to build into this, build into this race, see how we felt. We both actually felt fine by handling it like
sometimes
that.
Sometimes you have to go out quick to get your position on the trail.
In a bouchon. We were then in a traffic jam, but it narrowed up once it went off the road. It then went into a very narrow trail and we were kind of waiting. But it is what it is, isn't it? If you're, and it didn't matter to us. It was all just about running on tired legs, seeing how the fueling went and stuff like that. So we ticked along quite, Brynden was amazing. We got going quite quickly. We were going really well. The first descent was a track, which was great. My core felt tired. So note to self, I need to do more core work because it had obviously worked quite hard the next day, the previous day. We could sort of see, oh, it was amazing because all of my mates that I train with, they were all doing it too. So as it came out, like opened up into the meadow, I could see them all at different points, like, oh, with the pink shorts, with the yellow top going up the trail. That was lovely. It was such a lovely moment. And then on our WhatsApp group, my friend that was watching was like giving me updates of like where they were and stuff on the live tracker. So that was fun. Some big climbs in that day. It did start getting hot as well, but we just managed it. I let Bryn lead up the climbs. I just tapped up behind him. The descents, I led the descents. So the first couple, this is another big learning I need to work on. Quite often when you come off coals, it might be the same in some of the Lake District's descents. The first bit's really technical and then it sort of opens out. And when you've been climbing for like 20, 30, 40, 50 minutes to then find your descending legs, I really struggled the first two descents. Bryn was like, I'm a quicker descender normally than Bryn. And Bryn was behind me and I could hear people like behind me. I'm not the fastest, but I'm not normally the slowest. I can normally just about hold my own. I'd lost the ability. And I think, again, this I need to work on my core. I couldn't get my feet to move fast enough, stepping down when you need to, like, quick feet. I was like, come on. However, once I got into it, once I was like 3 or 4 hours into it, whether everybody else slowed down, and I think it was a bit of both, that people slowed down coming down them, I was able to keep up with the guys, hold my own. And then I'd look back and Bryn would be a good 400 meters behind me. And I was like, okay, good. I can rate to myself with how far behind Bryn is behind me off his descent.
I wonder if I'd ever get it, no matter how much I did it. I always think I'm quite a slow descender. And I just wonder.
Just more and more practice. But I do think as well, the tired legs, like that was what was really hard. And I kept trying to say to Bryn, you can't compare yourself to the people in this race because of what you did the day before. It's just taken the edge off the legs, and especially on things like really steep ups and the really steep downs when you need the muscle, you just felt that like deep hip quads IT band on the flats and on like bits of track and stuff. We were still running and like we're just keeping up in the group that went, if not by the end, we were overtaking people. So we got to about it's a different course. I've done it two times before and they always slightly change the course. You can't really compare it. So we got to a bit where you do a little loop and it started to get really hot again, but we were keeping the water. Bryn is incredible. He can shove. I gave him a whole load of Protein Rebel maple syrup gels and every time I looked at him, there was one going in. I was like, so proud. You're so good at this. He was such a legend. And then there's one that I kept saying to him, there's one last absolute mother of hell climb up the Black. So steep. And they make a path. So it's like this narrow, like they strim it. It's just mud. It's awful. You almost don't need poles because it's so narrow and slippy. One bit you have to cross a like a gorge, is that what you'd call it? And there's actually a mountain safety guy there because it's so horrible and slippy. And I did not enjoy that bit at all. And so I was like, you don't want to die up that bit because it's a 30, 40 minute climb and it could be like an hour and a half if you're dying. So I kept, fueling him. I'd take a bottle of Coke out of every aid station and be like, let's share this. Let's just keep moving. and
how often were you eating? Was it like every half an hour or something?
Yeah, I mean, checkpoints are a long time apart. So there was one. There's one right at the start. People do this, don't they? There's the one like 2 miles in, which of course you don't need. Then there's not another one. So there was only three checkpoints, of which one was at a good place, about 3 hours into the race. And then there was one at like four and one at four and a half, because that was on the buckle. So there wasn't a ton. So you did have to look after yourself. You had to manage your water. But I learned that from South Downs Way as well, about managing the time in between and taking that extra bottle out to have to rehydrate. And then you use your two bottles for the actual bit in between rather than rehydration if you've gone into the checkpoints a bit dehydrated. So we went up the last climb. Bryn Led was really strong. And then it got really technical. And actually, he was doing better over that than me. Again, I need to work on that core strength. It was definitely, I just couldn't get, I was like, feet, come on. Brain and feet were not engaging. And then the last bit of the black, Bryn started to question his life choices, and it was hot. And there was like, but we were still overtaking people, but he was definitely starting to feel the fatigue of 2 days of like just being out and that exposure and working hard.
I'm surprised. I know.
So we got to the top, and I'd done that climb loads on my skis as well. And I also didn't realize we went right to the top of Mont Cali. If you've ever skied around there, I thought it cut across. So I was like, we're almost there. And we're going to cut across. There's an aid station and we're down. And it didn't. It took us right to the top. And then there's a long, long, with a bit of technical running, descent down to the other side of the mountain. So there was another like 8K, which I didn't realize. So I sort of went ahead on this climb, and then I got to the top and I could see, I hoped it was his blue t-shirt behind me. And I just thought, I'm just going to run down this and just see what I got in my legs, how they're feeling, because I wanted to give myself a little bit of like, am I okay? I feel good. How do I feel? So I felt great. I wore some La Sportiva Akashas, which I think are going to be my shoe of choice for the race. James Elson at Centurion had said that's what he wore for Tour de Géant. The trails are rocky. They can be wet. They can be slaty. So you want a really good grip. That is what you want most of all. And because you're doing so much hiking, I wore a cushion shoe when I was hiking the day before. And actually that wasn't the right shoe, because you don't actually get the rebound back because you're not running. You actually want the grip if you're going up steep. So they were great. They were great down the descent. And then I got to the last checkpoint, and I got my race entry full of the food there and waited for Bryn to come in. And he was tired and hot. And so it was really good to like go, right, okay, what do we need to do? We need to eat, we need to drink. And this is where his army background is so good too. We had then like a rolling track before we started the big descent, and we could start hearing the finish line. And like what my friend was WhatsApping saying, we got to the finish. And I was like, we're coming. I was like, Bryn, the kids are there. Let's go. And I was like, do you want me to, should we do 20 seconds, like walk to the corner, run to the cattle grid, blah, blah. And he's like, you can say what you want. I'm not saying anything and I'm not even listening. I was like, you've got to sign now. I was like, okay. So we trotted on and he did amazing. And what he said at the end was good, because he's like, I'm that sort of stuff. From the army days, anybody that's done any sort of like outdoor endurance stuff like that, getting into that ultra shuffle is really hard when you're tired. But if you can do it, you can just move that little bit quicker over that like flat or rolling terrain. If the terrain's just slightly, and you just can just run over it. And Bryn was really good at that, at just keeping moving over that. And then ran down into town, really steep. So we ran down the lap that we'd been coming up 8 million times a day before. So it was really steep, poor legs. And ran down into town and ran in with, never done before, all of us, all five of us.
I saw the picture. Look at me.
What a moment. Kids had been great. Spent their weekend at a hot finish line and finished. Not the actual deets were about 42K, 2,600. It was almost exactly the same climbing as the day before. It took us
how many hours on feet?
Just over 6 hours. Six.
15, and did you have DOMS? Second day, did you wake up with?
No. No, just dehydration, just big, because we didn't have a downhill on the first day.
True.
So, yeah. And then we came home and the afternoon was a bit emotional because both of us were tired. And think in some ways it's given Bryn like a bit of a like, I've got to work hard for the next 6 weeks. I think he did say, like, he won't mind me saying, you know, I'm really scared of this challenge that we've got ahead. I found that hard. And I was like, yeah, but that was hard. Like,
yeah.
It was hard. It was two big days of climbing. Anybody that did that, even though, and that's hard to get your head around when you're like, but we didn't approach it as a race. We didn't race it, you know, we kept it, you know. And I was like, yeah, but it was still a lot of effort went into moving the body up the hills, down the hills.
All those hours in elevation. Don't underestimate that. Wow.
Don't underestimate it. So I was trying to like be, and then he you know, he's like, oh, you know, oh, we could have done better. And I'm like, no, you did perfectly. We've walked away from that tired, but you know, you got up at 6 a.m. the next day, you went to work, you're absolutely fine. We can start running again in a couple of days.
Sounds perfect.
And I think we learned a lot. I learned a lot about working, you know, as a team, that I can do it. And that I enjoyed it. I loved our time together. Like, even
it's
though
great
we didn't
that it's
actually,
local. You haven't had to drive for hours to do it.
I know. We wouldn't have been able to do it. So blessed. Hashtag blessed. I'm going to write him. I'm going to sit down. You know, Bryn gets a back of an envelope training plan every week on a Sunday night. So I'm actually going to sit down and actually go through and write him a paying client plan. And he will do it. He's really good like that. And give him, so that he feels confident that he's got that strength. Well, he's got the strength. I think actually what... is a bit of almost a bit more fitness will help rather than like needing to work specifically on an area. Just a little bit more fitness will help. Cause I was thinking about that too. Like, fitness just helps you. It enables you to absorb the fuel better, to be able to cope with the heat. If you're actually working less hard for the same pace, you can manage the other bits. It was much easier for me to manage the other bits when I'm not working, when I can actually engage the brain at the same time as well. So ended up being a mega week then of loads of vert. I think it was about 100K and just under 20. I haven't actually looked on Strava.
I think it sounds great. Two super big days. 8 weeks out. I think it's perfect. Not that I know what I'm talking about, but it's...
You make me feel good.
Brew of the Coaches is on its way, but it's super hard to get four people in the same room
parents.
At the same time. So yeah, it's coming. I'm not too sure when we're going to actually all sit down together. Maybe August, September, fingers crossed. But yeah, keep sending your questions in to hello@tandtrails. And yeah, when we get them all together, we'll start working our way through the questions. This week, we chat with David Parrish, a real modest down-to-earth guy who crushed the Cape Wrath Trail. If I could run a bit faster, I'd love to share some miles with David. Yeah, what a guy. Hope you enjoy our chat with David Parrish. Just under 200 runners toward the line, 88 finished the race, and this week's guest took the win at the 2023 Cape Wrath Ultra. Welcome to the Tea and Trails podcast, David Parrish.
Thank you so much for having me on.
he's already got an A star in our books because he's already mentioned that he prepared thoroughly and listened to a couple of podcasts. He might never listen again, but he's in our good books. David, where are you? What's the view from your window? And have you been for a run today?
Yes, I went for a run this morning. It wasn't very long or successful. It was about 2.5 miles. And the view from my window is the River Kelvin. So I'm at my girlfriend's house in Glasgow, but I live in Dumfries. And then going down the road with our dog today.
Oh,
I'm scared to ask, why wasn't it successful?
What the success, the run? I woke up late and I'd like to run to more than 2.5, but there we are.
I love that you did 2.5, because if I wouldn't bother going out for less than 5, I'd be like, bin that off. How are you feeling post Cape Wrath? How's the body been? How's recovery?
I'm starting to get back to feeling more myself. But I found like different pains to what I'm used to, because I'd never done an ultra before. I had quite a lot of like what I'd call stiffness in the night. So there's a bathroom on the landing, and getting up in the middle of the night to get to that, I was 4 points of contact. I think now, like, it wasn't so much the muscles, it was everything else. It was the joints. It was like general tiredness and fatigue, but it came back pretty quickly.
Because you've been sleeping on the ground as well, so it's not like every night you've been able to have a hot shower and sleep in a nice bed. You've been, your poor spine has taken a battering as well, being pretty close.
You were almost too buzzed to sleep as well. I could, even though I was getting to bed in good time every night, and I couldn't fault that I just couldn't really, I couldn't really get the sleep required. And of course, people are getting up and starting early with the Cape Wrath. They're, you know, they're there and they're nervous. So they're rustling around from about 5 a.m. onwards. And even though, you know, you can have maybe slightly more in your bed, you never quite get it.
Were you like, shut up, I'm winning this race, I need my sleep?
I had to be quite sympathetic because some people had extremely long days, you know, like they were, they would come in because you had a cut off of 10 p.m. every night. They would come in maybe.
And you hear them, don't you, coming in and you're like, oh, you're only just.
Yeah. And then they get up the next day and, you know, you're like ships in the night. And I couldn't imagine being on my feet for so long. I think that's quite, that's an incredible achievement to be able to do that.
And then when you run past them in the next day and they're so kind to you and like encouraging you, and you're like, no, other way, it's coming the other way, this love.
Yeah, there's almost this like atmosphere of utopia where nobody seems to get down about anything or complain, despite the fact that they must be, you know, being a lot of pain.
Well, you haven't had Gary do one of these events.
Yeah, I'm thinking
he'll bring the vibe right down.
Oh, could we rewind a bit before we get too much into the Cape Wrath Ultra? I'd love to know a bit about you, David, and your background as a runner. Yeah, you mentioned you'd never done an ultra before, so I'm super interested.
And we can't find anything. Gary is the number one stalker for guests, and he can find anything. And he's like, I can't find much deets on this guy.
So no, I don't. Probably not much of a well-known runner, although I've been running for quite a few years. I started late, so I'm 32 now, but I think I probably started running when I was about 17. Didn't really know what I was doing. I wasn't part of an athletics club at that point. I was just running with a water bottle and like headphones, and there was like this 5 mile route where I stopped a number of times, and then that developed where I didn't stop, and then I started like timing myself with the clock on the wall in the hall, and then I got a stopwatch, and then I got a proper pair of running shoes, and then like after a year or so of this and getting slightly faster, I joined like a local running group, which I'm still part of today, the Dumfries Running Club, who are just lovely. Yeah, so, and I did improve a little bit. I got quite into my fell running, and then I joined the Marines. So I gained.
Was that part of the fitness journey? Were you starting to running thinking I need to be fit to get in?
No, it wasn't. It came much later. Okay. I joined at 21. I think that was just was hankering for an adventure. Of course, like the Marines is super fitness focused, and the cardio wasn't so much of an issue for me, but I was quite light at the time and I struggled with dealing with weight on my back. So I gained a lot of weight. I gained like, I think I gained almost 15 kilograms over a period of 8 months.
Wow.
So that made a big difference to like how I could run. Years passed and I was always interested in running. It was always like a way to sort of get out of my own head, listen to music and things like that. And then I started doing parkrun to get back as like a metric to kind of getting faster again. And that was not that long ago. That was probably about 2019.
Still using your clock at home? Would you like to run out?
By this point, I'd actually gotten a watch.
An egg timer.
Yeah.
It's very Marines, that, probably an egg timer. Be like, we don't need minutes and seconds, just need blood.
Exactly. No, and I love the park run. It made me feel quite wholesome on a Saturday. And then things developed. And then I started to like get interested at the same time into hiking, which was, I guess, a throwback to the fell running days. At some point, and I can't remember how this happened, I got kind of transfixed on the Cape Wrath Trail. I was desperate to like hike that and wild camp that. I did it in 2021, probably because
as
I was
a solo adventure, or did you do it with somebody?
No, I did it with a girlfriend.
I hope there'd be a love story there.
Yeah, we did that. She thankfully, I don't think I could have done it alone. As much as you know, you had to compromise on where we camped and timings and things like that. It's an awfully remote, and that was 2 weeks long. I would have been talking to plants. I must have been Googling around the Cape Wrath Ultra, so it was a trail, and I was aware that there was an ultra that went alongside it, even though, you know, I'd never been quite into ultras or anything like that. And I was aware that a guy that previously used to be part of our club, who was called Marcus Scottney.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
He'd done it. And so I'd watched videos just because I was interested in him. And he used to actually run in Dumfries. I think he's now down south.
Is that a culture with Dumfries? I know my running club people like the trails, but yeah, not the distance of the Cape Wrath.
There's like there's another club nearby called Hartfell Running Club, and there are a few people within the club, I could name their names, who are really good in it and on ultras, and they've done things like the West Highlands Way, the Devils of the Hindmost, and Devils of the Highlands that I'm sort of aware of. But I'd never followed it. I just sort of taken it in by osmosis. I wouldn't say like we have a more than any other club like a sort of appetite for ultras, but certainly when I was on the Cape Wrath Ultra, people were messaging from the club that, you know, I didn't know knew me, and just being like, following your progress.
And now the club are like, this is obviously, they're all like, we'll sign up for that. David's never done an ultra. It can't be that tricky.
Exactly. I think a few people would be keen.
I love that. So you clicked enter, and then, so that was 2022, I guess, you clicked enter for this year?
It was towards the end of that year, I think.
And then how did you go about, like, preparing yourself? You ticked a lot of boxes with your military background.
So I wasn't super massive on the mileage. I was doing lots of Munro bagging. For people who don't know, Munros are like mountains in Scotland that are over 3,000 feet. And my dog is called Munro. So we go out together. And
just pause. What sort of dog do you have?
He's a English Springer Spaniel.
Called Munro. This is dreamy.
Called Munro,
Do you let Munro on the sofa?
I let Munro on. There's no boundaries, but unfortunately, someone else has set some boundaries. So
we don't need to chat about that anymore, but we can still be friends. It will be clear after, you'll understand why I ask a bit later on. Okay, sorry. Yes, so you were Munro bagging.
Yeah, and that was pretty much it. I mean, I tried to, and I did always intend to sort of build up the miles. I think maybe I was doing 50 miles a week at this point. In 2022 as well, last year, I was doing a lot of speed work. I had a coach who just does it. He's a guy called Ian Lippin, who lives locally, and he just does it for people that are interested. He's really nice, really selfless person. He's mega keen on getting people faster on the road. So I was doing all this. And then at the weekends, I was going up north and bagging these Munros with my dog. And I think a combination of the two were kind of getting me to about 50 miles a week. And I just think probably the best preparation I had was the terrain. You know, I'm so used to that terrain being from Scotland and everything just being wet constantly that, you know, that really did help. I mean, it's especially like when I think about it towards the end of when we were on like day 7 or 8, there was a Spanish guy who came second, and I was quite friendly with him, and another American guy as well called John. I remember going past them on day 2, and they didn't really know where to put their feet on the bog, but by like day 7 they were just unbelievable.
Got it. Yeah.
So it was kind of like I think had they come back next year, they would have probably walked it ahead of me, but yeah, I think like the terrain probably was the one bit of training I got a lot of. Maybe not I never maybe had the miles in my legs like other people, but that was definitely something.
It's like all these super long ultras, moving comfortably, with giving the least energy expenditure is the absolute key to any of these like super long, like the spine or like this, is like you just got to learn to move fluid over that terrain, specific work is actually that pays dividends to anything else that you can do, really.
Just to hear again, I think Jack Scott wasn't doing huge miles every week, and again, you just reinforce that you don't have to be doing 25 hours or 80-90 mile weeks.
You say all this, Gary. And if you're 20 hours, you're like, it was a terrible week, I've done nothing. Yeah.
No, I think I could be better if I did more miles, but I'm not sure it agrees with my body every time I try and like mildly implementing or slowly implementing these extra sessions. Something like starts to go awry. So definitely I just stick to what I know.
You've also been in such a physical job. You've got a massive volume of suffering within your body as well, but also your body has paid its due as well. So you have to look after it too, don't you? Probably carrying weight, you've done your miles almost, haven't you? So you have to sort of carry that now. All that good stuff it's given you, you also have to look after it in the same frame, don't you?
100%. And I think this is something that ultra runners are probably well well aware of, and not being one myself, I can't speak to it that well. But what we did have to do in Marines quite a lot was do exercise when you were tired or anything. Yeah. So you get into a similar mindset where you wake up, say, day five, and you're like, you know, if I were at home right now, no way would I dream of going on a run because my legs are gone. My knee is in clip, but I know that I have to do it and I know that I can do it because I've done it before. So it does help. It does give you a slight advantage. Oh, I think anyone who's done an ultra probably has that same sort of self-belief in their body.
It's really powerful. If you can draw on experience, that is really, really powerful. What was your goals going in? You know, I have been doing a bit of stalking, power of 10. I think you've got a 16:21 5K PB and a very low 34 minute 10K PB, if I'm right. So you are smoking fast on the short to middle distance. But yeah, how did that translate into this epic journey? As you were on the start line, what were your goals and aspirations?
I'm very competitive, so I wanted to do well. I did not envisage for a moment finishing first. And I was obviously aware of just the amount of things that can go wrong and the fact that it was such an alien type of event to me. How I saw it going was I would have tried to complete it no matter what. I thought there'd be someone there, maybe my kind of level, who I'd be like going between, you know, the whole time. But I didn't think that would be, I thought that would be in the top half, but then I didn't think I would win the Cape Wrath Ultra. And that was like a shock.
How did you handle that mentally then, day after day? Did you feel the pressure or were you
I was motivated by it, don't get me wrong. So the first day isn't too difficult on the Cape Wrath Ultra.
It's super runnable too, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you must have had to really draw back because you were like...
So I was trying to... So we were split into two waves, and the most I'd done in a race before that was a half marathon. We're still in a half marathon. You go off and you are given a bit back, but you wouldn't say you're going at talking pace.
Yeah.
But in an ultra, you obviously can have a bit of chat with your fellow competitors. And a few guys went to the front of the pack and they were maybe doing like 8 minute mile pace or maybe slightly above that, maybe like 8:30. And they sort of welcomed me in and they were just having a full blown conversation for about 5 or 6 miles, which is a completely novel experience to me. And just, you know, completely composed, able to talk, you know, no like red face or anything like that. But because when you're doing a park run or when you're doing a 10K, you're just blitzing it from the start.
And it's I just,
yeah. So I didn't really know. And what happened was you kind of, you're on road for 6 miles or so, and then you break into a trail and the trail undulates, but it does not really go to any create this height. And as there was a hill, they would walk. So I decided I'm just going to leave them because I don't really trust that. I don't think I can be on my feet for this long. I think I'm better maybe just trying to go at my own pace. I went ahead of them and I realized I was at the front of wave two, but I didn't know what had gone on with wave one. And so it was again a shock when I came in and it was the fastest time of the day. Not by much. I think it was only by 30 seconds. But at that point, because it was Glenfinnan, which is one of the only places on the whole Cape Wrath where you can get phone signal. A lot of my friends, it was quite touching, even though it was abusive. You know, they'd seen the results and they were like, you know, all these memes about me blowing up and being naive and things. And I was just determined to not let that. As the days went on, certainly day two and day three, I really did think people were just going to catch up and that was just, you know, I really thought that, you know, 20 miles on day one when you're fresh and I guess you're slightly naive like I was, you can maybe go to the front of the pack. But like day two, especially when we go through Noidart, which is one of the most remote and rough country, the whole of the UK, people would come past, the more experienced people would come past. But actually what is quite evident is that everyone's going through the struggle. And so as long as you can just apply yourself for every single moment of the race and go to just above your comfort level, but not push it too hard, you can maintain and with the others in the pack.
Did you use a heart rate? I always use that as a metric of effort when I'm running. How did you gauge your effort on the days?
It was more like a perceived effort type of thing. So I disabled heart rate because of the, like, to keep the battery life on my GPS going for longer. I guess it was more like just above my kind of comfort level. So just outside of my comfort zone for running. Yeah. And when I was going up hills, perhaps I was dipping higher than I should have into a state where I was maybe struggling a little bit with my muscles, etc. But I was feeling the pressure, like I say, of people coming past me, being chased that whole time. You're just thinking, what's that other person doing? I bet they're feeling strong.
I'm really curious of this because of all the staggered times, people start at different times.
Yeah.
You've all got different accumulation of time. Did you feel like you were in a race? Psychologically, I'm never going to be experiencing that in Dragon's Back race. That's not my goals for that event. But I'm just really curious how mentally it all plays out, because somebody will go past you, but they may not be competitive. But in your head, you still don't want someone to go past you.
No, exactly, 100%. Firstly, you probably will, because what will happen is the area will have this like results live results list, and you'll see the person and you'll recognize their number, and every day you'll be like, I'm racing that person. So you definitely will be racing.
And they always end up like passing you the same time of day as well. So you know, oh, they caught me early. Damn it. Or I've got them. I've got number 117 earlier.
That's the walking thing.
I'll take them down.
when you're starting at different times, because there's cutoffs. So I think as you settle into the race, you get a receipt which says what time you're mandated to start at. So for most people, that'll be, you can start at any time from 7 and 8. I don't know what it's going to be for the Dragon's Back, but, and then some people will have to start after 8, and then some people have to start after 8:30. You do get used to seeing people at certain parts of the day, or like, you think, I'm going to see that person. For example, there's a guy with a lion rampant Scotland flag coming out of his backpack, and I'd always expect to see him at certain times of the day. And then there was like certain friends I'd met that I'd, you know,
that give you such a lift when you see them.
Yeah, but at the same time, you do feel like you're in a race, but it's not quite as kinetic as doing a 5K, for example. But it's almost more grinding psychologically, because you're just like, that person is on my tail the whole time, and you feel that in your mind.
Yeah, one, you know, I lose a shoe, I twist an ankle.
Yeah.
Holding it
the game's
together.
Over.
Game's over. Can we talk a little bit about tent life? What was your sort of idea about what tent life was going to be like? And did you like have tent mates before? Because you can sort of choose you're going to share tent, or was it just a random group of seven smelly men?
Yeah, I was probably the smelly man. I was in a tent with some Australian guys. They were mostly Australian, so they're 8-man tents. And there was two guys from Australia called Anthony, and they were pretty much walking most of the whole thing. So when I was talking about those people coming in from at 10 and getting up at 7, those were the guys. I loved it. We had a really understanding tent. They were mega considerate. We used to get the map out in the middle of the tent in the evening and talk about the route. Because I'd actually walked it before, I was able to like say what was coming.
You were the oracle. Great.
I was, I was a fountain of knowledge. They were giving me ultra tips, and I was giving them sort of route tips. It was great. It was a whole, the whole experience was, even like from the volunteers, probably set this atmosphere. It was like a utopian sense of positivity. You know, people were just so encouraging. I've never seen anything like it. Every morning and just before the race, you know, because the volunteers there are, you know, most of them are not paid. They're camping it.
And it's 8 days. It's a long time.
And the midges were biblical. So they just had to stand there. You know, you could hide in your tent, but the people on the tea and serving the tea, or, you know, in the food tent, the catering tent, they just had to sit and strong it out with these blood-sucking midges. So I love the tent life, to be honest with you.
Oh. I've got to ask you one bit about tent life.
Are you going to ask? Yeah. You don't have to answer this, and we can edit this out, David. But
Gary's, I heard a good I heard a good tactic for tent life is you go in with a bottle to hydrate, and then an empty bottle to stop you, say, wandering around at night if you need to go to the toilet.
I then adopt that strategy. Perhaps my tent mates would have preferred if I did, because I've got quite a weak bladder. But I just got up in the night sometimes, a couple of times, because I was trying to take on all this water. But
David invalidated it, Eddie. I'd have been all over that bottle, but it's
he's a classy guy, Gary. He's a classy guy. Could you share a little bit about your camp admin? Now we know we have an ex-Marine in our midst. Can you give perhaps people anything that really worked well in your admin of like coming in, sorting your kit? Did you have a checklist? What was your sort of like running order?
It wasn't so much a checklist, but definitely something. It's very easy when you come in from a long run to just, as soon as you get the tent. And
When we come in from a long run on a normal day training, don't we? Well, I do. I just like lie around,
exactly.
Have a bit of protein. And my husband's always like, will you go and have a shower? And I'm like, this is the best bit, the sort of lying around.
Yeah, no, again, that's the temptation. And I wouldn't say my routine, if there was one, was like foolproof. But certainly there would be certain things that I try and do as soon as I got in. So I'd definitely try and take my shoes off straight away. Air my feet out because they'd be wet and cramped and crinkled and all that. I'd try and kind of get into like a comfortable pair of clothes and then head to the nearest like cold water and take a little dip. I'm not mega brave with cold water, so I wasn't always like doing a full body dip, but I'd at least try and get my legs in there. And I think that really benefited. A lot of people did that. And then shortly after that, I'd go and have chips, which is a staple of the Aurea event itinerary. And so chips, loads of salt and a bit of soup. And that would be me. And I'd sit up and maybe try and elevate my legs if there was space to do so. So they have these bean bags set up with chairs that you can elevate your legs on. And so that was more or less my routine.
I'm visualizing sunny camp. When I see pictures in Dragon's Back Rees and on the Cape Wrath website, it's sunny, people are in the river, chilling out, getting clean. What was the reality during the race?
Totally was that. It was
all right.
Astounding weather, yeah. I mean, I'm saying this and people might be like, I'll do the Cape Wrath next year because it's going to be great weather. But no, it won't be. I just am really lucky. We had a couple of like moments of bad weather. One on day 7, which was bad. And I think the start of another day was quite wet. But apart from that, it was pretty sunny, but quite still. So because it was still, again, like I mentioned, the midges and people should not underestimate how uncomfortable they can be, because it was that was quite a hindrance. But now we had great weather, and the year before I think they had I actually got quite close to a guy who didn't finish the year before but happily finished this year, and the attrition on him, because of course once you're wet and then they were bringing it into the tent, it wasn't as if it seemed like the rain would never stop, and it was very difficult to get dry in any way, because you're sharing a tent with 8 people and they're bringing in water, and very uncomfortable very quickly if the weather's bad. I think
did you have any moment throughout the whole 8 days when you thought, I can't do this, this is beating me?
No, not really. I had a moment on the day 7 where my knee was starting to, I thought, get really bad. So I had a mild like knee strain pain thing. I don't know exactly what it was. I set off to run on day 7, and by this point I was quite happy because I was getting into it. Everyone was really friendly and encouraging, and I started running and I was like, oh, that's really bad. And I was struggling to actually run, but it did eventually kind of loosen off. But I think in terms of like my lowest moment, that was probably it, because I did think it would be so heartbreaking if I lost this now because of some like what I couldn't actually think of an event that had caused it. It was just a kind of overuse injury, so it would have been quite cruel on me had it taken it away.
Is there like an on-site medical team? I'm just thinking, if somebody's thinking about entering this race, what kind of infrastructure they're going to have at their disposal? Yeah, can you lean on some medics?
Yeah, 100%. There's like a group of just lovely people in a med tent, and they'll deal with any woe that you have. They can. So like I've not got any medical background, but I think quite a typical injury is like anterior tibialis, is that essentially just at the bottom of your shin, by your foot, some tendonitis there. For that, they were kind of taping people up or giving them stretches that they should do. And I went to see them about their knee. So they do.
Did you tell the medics or did you sort of hide?
No, it was when it was growing up, I wasn't really wanting to go in. So it was kind of bubbling up. Yeah, side story to this, I completely was inappropriate on the footwear side of things. So you can bring 2 pairs of shoes, and I brought the same shoe, which was this sort of minimalist Innovate Talon racing shoe. And so by day
you
four,
were like, just a pair of Hokas, it's all I want.
Yeah,
a cushion.
It was just every footstep, you could just feel it just reverberate up your spine. And so, yeah, so that's, I think, probably what caused the knee pain. But thankfully, like, one of the selfless fellow runners called Ian gave me a pair of his shoes to use for the rest of the... Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So he was. It was Talons, but just like an ultra pair. So they had more in, and it was just, it was beautiful. Yeah, I can't remember where I was going with that, but yeah, basically the med tent people were just so good with everyone there. I mean, they did what they can to keep you in the race, and they were triaging people as well. You know, if you just had foot problems like blisters and stuff like that, they had a sort of part for you. But anyone with like, no, I think you need to have a look at this. They went, you know.
Oh no! Don't turn right. Don't come back.
No, it wasn't anything like that. They did their best to keep people in, and I think they left the decision in people's hands for most of it. They were just like, look, you can do this. Is what I'm giving you, but it's your choice. And certainly with my knee, they just strapped me up and just said, "Well, crack on."
Oh yeah, they were like, "David, come on, out you go."
Basically, when you turn up to camp and you've got to go through the whole kit check process, you've got your day bag, uh-huh. You've got your big 20 kilo bag, yeah. And all of your kit. Yeah, I'm completely selfish. I'm asking for myself. what does that look like?
So you have these, I think one of the only specific mandatory bits of kit is this Ortlieb 20, is it a 90 liter dry bag? And something like that, maybe 70 liters. And in that you have your, all your camp kit. Can't really remember, but it's things like, sleeping system, spare pair of shoes, all your food. Exactly. Yeah. Sorry. And then separate to that, you have, your mandatory kit for carrying during the race. And that's just full body cover like you would get in most fell races, calories for the day, compass, whistle, head torch with spare batteries.
And what was your weight of food? Because again, I imagine for most people, this could probably take up half of the weight of your bag.
Like, that was a complete area of like, I didn't have a clue what to bring on, because I very rarely eat on a run. Like I just hadn't. I mean, I've never had a gel in my life. until the first time I had a gel was on day two, and it was like one of the most remote regions, and I was just like, oh, this
is the time, David, well. If there's a time to pop my gel cherry, this is it.
I wasn't sure whether how the stomach was going to react, but yeah, so food does take up a big...
What did you eat then? What did you pack?
Look, I can remember vividly, and it wasn't so long ago, it's like 3 months ago, I was looking at YouTube videos of runners talking about what to eat on a run, and they were saying, I just thought I should stick to natural food as much as I could. So I brought things like a Sorine malt loaf, pork pies. Obviously, like, I couldn't have pork pies into like day eight, because they would have passed their set by day and you would have issues with refrigeration, etc. But like, thankfully the first 3 days I had like a pork pie to look forward to, and then I went for some synthetic stuff. So like, well, not, I wouldn't call it synthetic, but Vela Forte bars, which were next rung down, and then like Naked bars,
desperate.
Yeah, and then again, further down the I need something now and I do not have any saliva to chew anything, it was the goo gels.
Oh, yeah. I would need to be probably
really tough
someone
to get
squirts.
Down a goo gel.
I'd have to be lying on the ground and someone actually put that in my mouth, a goo gel.
Really? Do you not like them? Their
texture, David, is...
I found them quite Moorish. But again, maybe it was because, again, I haven't had one since. It was just when I was in the
lowest point
sort of headspace.
You were like, this is incredible. It's a bit like the first taste you have when you really want a Chinese takeaway compared to the last one when you're like, I shouldn't have done that. I shouldn't have done that. We talked a bit about your lowest point. Have you got the highest of the highest point? Can you remember that during the race?
I think coming in some of the days was just a really nice... I think to specific days, so like the second last day. I'm trying not to give like the last day, which
yes, because we're gonna go on to that.
It's obvious. It's obvious that was a happy day. but like, there were some moments that like I didn't realize were happy, but looking back are really nice memories. Like, there was a guy called Sam Hill who came third, And on day three, I think, which was a really long day, but lovely day. So some of the most beautiful parts of Scotland. So we were running together for like the last little bit, descending off this hill. That's a really happy memory. And then coming into camp and everyone was, you know, so supportive. And they, some of them were that weren't working had come up the trail so they could see you and clap you in and kind of, and it was just a nice experience. And there was a lot of days like that. Yeah. And maybe the end of day seven as well, because I think when I had completed that day knowing that the next day was only 16 miles. I can't believe I'm saying only 16 miles, but in the context of the whole thing, that's not a lot. I was just like, I'm definitely going to complete this now, even if I have to like crawl on a fingernail to the lighthouse. So that was probably like crossing the line on the seventh day, probably the happiest I felt on the whole thing.
And what is that last day like? Eddie and I chatted before we jumped on the mic. Is it still a race, or is it almost like the Tour de France, the last day of the Tour de France when everyone's drinking champagne?
That for the Cape Wrath, it's like 4 miles on the road, and then it's across the Sandwood Bay beach, and then it's another 8 miles across quite sort of undulating terrain to the Cape, to the lighthouse. And you start off, unlike the other days where they stagger it based on, so you kind of all finish together, because that's such a short day, they actually have the people that are in the lead at the time starting at the start. So that was myself and Joe. And then they stagger people based on their times behind that. So I actually got caught very quickly on the last day by second place. But he sort of just stayed with me. I mean, he could have gone past, because at that point my knee was ready to like fall off. But he just kind of stayed, and we ran together to the end. So we weren't racing, but I think had we been closer in terms of times, there's only so much you can make up over 60 miles. He may have raced, but I think he thought it was a bit unbecoming. So just sort of,
it was 2 hours, wasn't it? I think the gap was 2 hours. So
yeah, I think so. Yeah, so I think he thought, I can't make that up.
And in your head, you were like, don't champagne.
It was difficult, but yeah, he was really good. And he had his GoPro out, and he was filming us, and because I hadn't up to that point taken many photos. So,
and I wonder on the flip side of that, as the week goes on, then these people who are chasing the cutoffs, they start last. I don't know if you know this. Mm-hmm. But was there anybody close to being timed out because they had to start day eight after all of you guys?
I don't know exactly, but I think my impression of it is, because I think there was something like five, they were staying till at the lighthouse, so 5 p.m. And it was 60 miles. And I think the last people were setting off by 9. So they had about 8 miles to cover 16, 8 hours to cover 16 miles. So I don't think anyone could have timed out on day five without like something going very amiss. But certainly day seven, you know, there were some people who did the full, because there's the Explorer as well, right? So there's like the Cape Wrath Ultra full. And then there's the Explorer for people who choose that, you know, either they pick up an injury or they miss a cutoff, or which is like, say, checkpoint one to the end or checkpoint two to the end of each day. And the logistics they run for that to accommodate these people is brilliant, because they can still stay in the race. You know, they've trained so hard to do this, and then they can still stay in the race. But anyway, yeah, day seven, I think people must have been like, oh, I hope I don't time out now. Yeah, that would have been pretty hard to stomach.
You cross the finish line. You're a few weeks post Cape Wrath Ultra now. I don't know which one of these I should ask first. Would you do it again?
Yeah, I would. Yeah, 100%. I love that part of the world, and I'd love to do it again. But I think next year what I'll do is I'll volunteer instead.
Oh, stop it. The shining star. If you did do it again, or now you truly would be the oracle in the tent then if you did it again, what or would you do anything differently?
I don't know. I don't think I'd do it as well if I did it again, because I think part of my like naive nature sort of benefited me, because I didn't know what was coming.
Absolutely. I don't understand how people do these mega events again, because I think, if I knew what was coming, I'd say no.
You're playing on your mind. Yeah.
Take a different set of shoes, David.
Go for it. You're right. Thanks for pointing that out. 100%. Yeah. So I would have taken a different pair of shoes. Like that just was. And also I didn't really bring a pair of so my second pair of shoes were also my camp shoes. I think like my feet would have benefited. I did just walk around barefoot, but my feet.
Did you? Did you not get bitten then by the midges?
Oh yeah, but by that point, I mean,
You couldn't feel anything. You didn't.
I just sort of gave up.
I did the same when I did the spine. I forgot to take any shoes for like in the checkpoints.
Yeah.
And I was too embarrassed. I didn't tell anybody, so I just kept wearing these old socks around. My feet would be freezing and all wet, and they'd be like, "Where's your camp shoes?" And I'd be like, "Oh, they're just
I lost them on the trail." No, that would have been, I mean, we had good weather and so the ground was dry, and so I could have got away with, but you would have been freezing doing the spine and
it's very expensive to enter one of these events. Yeah. Would you say that, perhaps people are thinking of entering, that it's value for money? It's worth, you know, it's basically a price of your holiday, you know?
Yeah, it is. It is very expensive. Yeah, but it's a circular economy. So if you can, volunteer beforehand, then you get credits. I'm not specifically sure how that works, but a lot of people who do the Cape Wrath Ultra, they've gained their knowledge because the year before they volunteered, and again, you can use your volunteering tokens for other races that they have, like the Dragon's Back, for example. So, but it is value for money, you know, like you're very, very well looked after, and the amount of like logistics it goes, as someone who's walked it as well, I know that it's very difficult to reach
the ins and the outs.
I can't
imagine the infrastructure to move all of that up the country in what is not the most accessible part of the country. It just boggles my mind. So yeah, I've never done it. I've seen a bit of the spine race, and again, what goes on to just make everybody safe and it all work well. Yes, it is expensive, but yeah, I think it's good. I don't think anybody's getting rich out of it.
No, definitely not. There's always a nice little twist they've put. It's sort of like a wedding in that sense. You know, that way there's always something there to surprise you, some little like nuanced surprise, like a band pops up or somewhere. That was like the Cape Wrath. There was just always a little touch there that you thought, oh, that's really nice. They've not really skimped on looking after this.
That's a lovely thing to say. What did recovery look like then when you made your way home? Because you've never recovered from an ultra, so you don't know how it feels to get off the toilet the next day when you actually can't get off the toilet, when you're sweating.
I don't know if anyone's experienced this, but I had like a tummy upset afterwards. So it wasn't like, it was like a feeling of, I would get bouts of hunger.
Yeah, yeah. It's normal. Yeah, and you'd be like, I'm starving. And then you start eating and you go, oh no.
You can't stomach it. Yeah, so that continued for like a week afterwards.
So disappointing, isn't it? Yeah. So disappointing.
It's at a time when you're screaming for calories, it's very disappointing. So you go through bouts of like extreme hunger to like can't stomach anything. That was what I noticed. And like I mentioned, I had some like legacy kind of, probably because I never did the recovery very well. So people were saying like, take time off, take like 2 weeks off. And I wouldn't say I didn't listen to them, but I probably didn't listen to them. And I just went out with the dog like not long afterwards, because your muscles kind of recover quite soon, I would say.
Oh yeah, it's not the muscles.
It's the other part of your body.
Yeah.
I wanted to get it right. Because we're what now, like a month and a half afterwards? No, in fact, we're coming up for 2 months afterwards. And only now am I starting to feel kind of better.
I don't think you realize how fatigued you are either until you start to feel better. And then you go, oh yeah, I've been feeling, actually, I have.
Exactly. Yeah. You forget what normal feels like.
I always get blown away when I look at some people after the race. I think Damien Hall, obviously, went over to Barclay. Joe Meek was in Finland.
Courtney DeWalter ran Hard DeWalter. Rock 3 weeks after Western States. And I think, oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's wild. Some people's power of recovery.
Well, I can't get away with that. So,
Well, super well done, David. Before we move on to our quick five questions, what's in the books for 2023 or even 2024? I'm not too sure what your plans are.
Yeah, so Aurea, like, kindly have extended, I think they've extended a couple of invites to like races, so I'll probably try and do those next year. As for this year, I don't know, I was a local runner, so quite like doing the local races. There's like a duathlon in Dumfries and Galloway called the Hard Rock Challenge, which is like in Dalbeattie Forest, so I'll probably do that, a couple of runs around the local area. I'd never even heard of Chamonix before, so I have looked at like what other ultra events there are out there, and one that does grab my attention is the spine race. So I don't know if I can sign up for this year, but maybe I might start working towards doing that, because now that I've done multi-day where you get to rest and recover each night, albeit under austere conditions. I'd like to go the full kind of...
Yeah.
Well, I thought you were talking about the spine then. I was thinking, oh God, he hasn't read the race details. And like, you get to rest and recovery tonight. And I was thinking, shall I say anything or should I go?
No, that's the level of sort of naivety that you're working with though. So I forgive you for thinking.
No, I love it. You'd be so good at the spine. Yeah. But maybe the Northern Traverse first because...
Yeah.
Then no, I can see you at the start line.
And are you doing that next year?
Yeah, baby. Yeah.
Ah.
And I'll race you all the way. Yeah, so I'm not shy of being competitive.
When is it?
April.
April, okay. Right.
Awesome. Yeah, bring it on, Dave. Get your tokens in, get the entry on. I think that'd be awesome. I'll see you at Robin Hood's Bay. That'd be good.
Yeah, Gary's taking me back to the airport. He doesn't know that yet.
I'll do that. Don't worry about that. I did have something else to say. I forgot now. No, I suppose what I was going to say, I just think it's awesome that you will do that and then you're not afraid to go and rock up at a duathlon. I just love that variety. I hear that quite often with our guests. Okay. Quick five. Well, we've got, as usual.
I've popped in. Yeah.
It's okay. We'll do them all. Quick seven.
Okay. We love you, Dave. We'll keep you here a bit longer. 5 minutes left.
Favorite ice cream flavor?
Oh, I like the sorbets, and it would have to be like a mango, I think, a mango sorbet.
The kids had like this bubblegum ice cream yesterday, and even them, you know, a nine-year-old, he couldn't finish it. It was like, Mum.
Is that bright blue?
Bright blue. Yeah. I saw the guy helping it, and I said, doing it, I was like, I can't be the mum that goes, oh, no, stop, no, too much blue.
Well, I'm interested what this one's going to be. How do you like your spuds? Mashed, chipped, crisps, or boiled?
Roasted. That wasn't an option, though, was it?
It was an option. No, no, no. It's your answer.
Can I say that?
Yeah, roasted is best.
Well, it was one of those roasted things, though. It comes around at Christmas, and you're like, why do I not have these more often?
Should. Do you only have roast potatoes at Christmas? Do you not have
maybe why it's my favourite choice, because it just best. There's a lot of admin involved in a roast potato to do it right, you know. I'm not often in my kitchen cupboards.
You need an air fryer and then it's just straight in. 15 minutes done.
Oh, I'm always interested what this answer is going to be. Guilty TV pleasure. I'm looking for something on Netflix, David. What can you recommend?
That's guilty. Probably like dating ones. I mean, I don't watch them very often, but when I do, I find them like
Married at First Sight,
or First Dates. Or I just quite like a show like that. Yes, it would be those. Is that guilty? I don't know. Maybe it's
yes,
not, but
that's guilty and embarrassing. Both those two things together.
How many times in the morning do you hit the snooze button?
Yeah, like this morning with your 2.5 mile run. Shame on you, Marine.
So I don't like a snooze button, but like Jade does. So she'll, and I find it quite frustrating because she, you know,
you're like, just get up.
Loads of alarms. Exactly. No, but it's this, the you know, you've got that time you intend to get up. And then they set it like an hour before. It's like, why would you do that? You're just upsetting your sleep. And they just snooze and snooze and snooze and snooze and snooze. I'm not one of those people, but what I will do is I'll set myself unrealistic targets. So I'll be like, I'm going to get up at 6:30 tomorrow for a run. And then that maybe turns into 7. But I didn't do that with that intention. It just kind of laziness took hold in the morning.
It's so hard. That's 6:30. 6:30 is all right. Anything before that, I have to really want it.
Especially in the winter when it's tough. It's tough.
Very difficult.
Okay, what's your favourite board game?
Monopoly.
That's it?
No, Scrabble. It's definitely Scrabble.
We had to play Pictionary last night, which I've not played for years, and I remembered why I hadn't played it for years because I can hate
it's
so controversial. Everyone gets so angry. My mum was shouting, my dad was shouting, kids were crying.
I don't think there's a game other than Snakes and Ladders, a board game, that doesn't get people frustrated, because maybe Snakes and Ladders, just because it's just so much luck.
And does also Scrabble, it harks back to your childhood, doesn't it? Because as soon as you get it out, all comes back about throwing stuff and violence, everything.
Yeah, it all comes flooding up. But yeah, Scrabble's quite civilized. I can't imagine getting shouted at Scrabble.
You always get the words that are questionable. Right. And like, what's the golden source of words? Is it the dictionary or Google?
Well, I think you partly answered this. But yeah, let's get again. Is your dog allowed on the bed?
He's allowed on my bed, but I'm trying to, again, I'm a first time dog owner, so I've probably not got things right. And the fact that he can do what he wants means that he really thinks that he can do what he wants.
Yeah.
I think it should be a treat, but that's not the reality. The reality is he's always sitting on my bed.
Oh, he's allowed to do whatever he wants. He's your pal.
We've never asked this one before, but do you listen to music or podcasts or both when training?
I listen to music. I've always listened to music, yeah. I sometimes feel lost on a run if I'm not listening to music, and I know that's not healthy. Unless I'm with someone, obviously. I'm not one of those people that runs in groups.
I see that. Like, sometimes girlfriend and boyfriend running together, and they've got their AirPods in, and I'm like, that's, I think they just go separate ways if that's the way you're going to... Is that the way you're
exactly?
Going?
No, that's how running started for me. I would like get music, and I would listen to music on the run. It's not always safe to do so, but I love it. I love music.
I love it too. I don't do it all the time, but sometimes a run with a good beat is just the best, and you can just shut everything out and just get lost in the music.
I used to just be podcasts, but then I ran out of podcasts to listen to, and I had to lean on my music library. And yeah, I just thought I couldn't do it. I thought the beat would just disturb but it was fine.
Yeah,
fine. I don't know what I was worried about. But yeah, talking about music, every week we will share an Instagram story, David, and you get the choice what song we will put to your story. What's it going to be?
I'll choose Frightened Rabbit. Do you know Frightened Rabbit?
I don't know. What is, is that a band or a song? Sorry.
It's a band, yeah. Frightened Rabbit are a band. They're my favourite band. I'd love it if you shared their music on your Instagram story.
Any particular song?
Say it again.
Frightened Rabbit.
Oh, Frightened Rabbit.
Yeah.
I won't tell you what I thought you were saying.
Any particular song? I'm trying to think of one that... What's the video? That this is important.
This is you. Gary puts your pictures to this music, basically.
Okay.
I'm looking at that. This is Frightened Rabbit. Let's have a look. The Woodpile, The Modern Leper, Swim Until You Can't See Land. Oh, that sounds quite good. I Wish I Was Sober, Holy, Head to Roll Off, How It Gets In.
Oh, there's so many classics that you just...
I don't even know like the names of songs these days because I just play them on my phone.
Yeah.
Woke Up Hurting, that might be a good one.
I think I'll go with Modern Leper because that's what most people know. And okay. Sam Bender recently covered it at Transmit, which was a Scottish music festival. So people might be...
Is it a Scottish band?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Gary hates it when I do this because he gets so worried about copyright. Oh, it's a long intro. Where are we going with this? Cripple walks amongst you all, you
tired human beings.
I love it. Oh, I'm going to add that to my... I'm going to add that to my Spotify.
Glad that didn't start with a swear word.
It's always Eddie in a potty mouth. Dragon start. Well, it's been a treat, David. Thanks for your time tonight.
Oh, no worries. Thanks for having me on. Really appreciate it.
We look forward to seeing how fast you get and also your future endeavours into the ultra world. It's a super chilled out, kind of let's go roll with the punches kind of guy.
Yeah. We see you on the Northern Traverse and say hello and Robin.
Yeah, hope to see you there. And good luck with your dragon's back.
Oh, thank you. Chase, thanks.
Don't worry.
Ooh, looking forward to the Silver Northern Traverse now. Me and David will share at least 20 seconds on that trail at the start line until he skips off into the distance. Let's just see. I'd like to say, he might over the Lake District part and I'll catch him up on the flat section, but sadly my 5k is a few
minutes slower
than him, but really excited to see how he prepares for that. Not a non-stop event heading into a bit of sleep deprivation and no midges, so winning. Thanks so much for David for coming on the podcast.
Tales from the Trails, but first we'll head to our Strava Club. Everybody's request to follow this week, so can't really see what they're up to, but I do know what one of them was up to. But first of all, Mike Raffin took the win for the overall mileage, 151 miles. Now, I know Mike does like a big, long event, so I'm just curious what he was up to, what he's training for. Lisa French took the win for total time on feet, just under 38 hours. Yeah, so that must have been an event too. Maybe it was
Ultra Glen. There was the Beacon Beacons going on, the Beacon Beacons 100.
Yeah, well, Ultra Glen. Now, Ultra Glen is a request to follow, but I know who Glen is. And he was doing the Brecon's Way Ultra 100-mile race. Covered that distance in 33 hours and 26 minutes. The weather looked absolutely horrendous.
It looked pretty bad, didn't it? I mean, I had a client running it and he said lots of people didn't even start because they saw what the weather, you know, you sign up for a lovely Welsh summer experience and you get
I saw a little bit of video footage because sometimes the rain doesn't really tell, the picture doesn't tell the tale of the rain, but I think the rain and the wind, it just looked absolutely horrible. So everybody, well done everybody who actually physically, when they pulled the curtains back that morning, they actually got in the car.
Yeah, brave to even tow the start line on knowing that you
100 miler,
wet bands for 30
well done,
plus
well
hours.
Done, everybody. And we're going to start doing some results soon, so we're just waiting for our friends.
Are we now? Have you run that past your co-host, or is this just a new venture?
Well, I thought our friends who support the show, the guys over all the trails, Green and Wild.
We used to read results. I enjoyed reading results, and so maybe we will. But maybe we should ask for people to send in their results.
Well, it does, yes. If they don't send them in, then I can't read them out. But what I do need to say is the guys over all the trails, their Yorkshire Wolds Ultra opens for entries on the 1st of August, and that's a 50k circular route with 3,700 feet of vert. I absolutely love a looped route. So yeah, if you check out episode 28, you can check out what Grant has got to say and you can find out more about Ultra Trails. Yeah, it's great to say also that tees are an optional extra, so that's allowed them to reduce the entry fee to, I think, about £42, which is good. And you're going to love this, Eddie. You now have the option to have a wildflower seeded medal. So that's pretty cool. We've all got enough medals, so that's pretty awesome. Yeah, pop over to ultratrails.co.uk or go to the Friends tab on tandtrails.com to find out more.
I thought you did that.
And join their Strava Club too, and even their newsletter, so you won't miss out anything that's going on. I saw the OM had announced their location. I didn't realise they kept that secret.
Yes.
Until closer to the event. Is that just to stop people from going to do recce?
Practicing the route, yeah.
The 54th OM sees races heading back to Snowdonia, so there's no shortage of steep hills and rocky descents and rough ground to get lost on, and that's in October. It looks awesome fun. Maybe 2024 TN Trails team, we'll see. And I'm pretty sure I saw that Andy Berry and Damo are towing the line this year, so we'll hit them up.
Oh, hit them up. Maybe. Yeah. And then we could do like a lottery. Damo gets to go with one of us. Andy gets to go with the other one. And we're basically there. I'm not sure what we'd be there for.
I wonder who's the nap man out of those two.
Ooh, good question. Who would be the nap? We basically just argue. Yeah, we just argue.
We need Bryn. Can you do a team of three?
Team of three. Or maybe you'll have had enough of me by then and you and Bryn and I'll get Trish. Oh, Trish and I versus you and Bryn. We've got something. Oh, you and Russell. We got something going on here.
Yeah, we could do something. Yeah, maybe you see us two on the line for 2024. That'll be super exciting.
We've got a Tales from the Trails from Jonathan Sink, our friend. I was pacing my friend on the South Downs Way 100 a couple of weekends ago. Somehow I found myself doing a 53K stint because of a variety of reasons, but I was happy to help Daniela on what could be the second of her slam events. She wasn't in a good place stomach-wise and the night was long and hard, but the sunrise brought fresh hope and we were hiking fast and well. After reaching the infamous Trig Point and then the unpleasant descent down to the final road section of the course, our sense of humour came back. During that last 30 minutes or so, we came up with a little list that we titled Stupid Ways to DNF 100 in the Last 3K. Here we go. Tripping over in the very last bit of trail as you transition to the road section. Seriously, just walk those rocks. You're not an elite. If you've ever done the South Downs Way, Gary, it tips down this really steep gully. There's often trees down. Your legs are fried, but you've got to go down about 1,000 meters, like a kilometre basically worth of really quite technical trail before then you hit the road and it's a run in on the road to the finish. Getting knocked over, then you have to cross the road. Getting knocked over crossing the road because you want to save a few seconds in the hours you've been out. Use a crossing, wait for the green man. The ultra shuffle won't save you. I would argue with you that the ultra shuffle will save you many times, Jonathan, if you can dial it in. Stopping when your watch hits 100 miles, even though you have 2K to go. ago. The RD lied to me isn't an excuse. Just walk to the finish. Chasing down another runner to gain one place when you have no legs and you ate the last of your fuel. Placing means everything after 28 hours. No, no, it doesn't. I don't know. I always love a last minute, last ditch attempt to move up the leaderboard. I definitely do this. Taking the steeplechase part of the track finish, bonus points for the water jump being empty, showing off to the crowd isn't big or clever. We didn't do any of these. And safe to say, the possible slam is still on. It is, because since then, Daniela has gone on to do Wendover Woods 100 as well. Now you better just sign up to North Downs Way 100. Then I'll be there at Alton 100 to help you collect that big buckle. Well done, Daniela, and well done, Jonathan, on excellent crewing. Yeah. Often when you sign up for crewing and you end up doing a big old stint, don't you? Because the person won't let you go sometimes as well.
It's a high stress job.
And it's hard to leave someone as well if you know you can stay with them when they're in a bit of a tricky place as well. So thanks for sharing those last few miles with us.
We're still running our double competition header to celebrate our Innovate. Jack Scott and Andy Berry double header. Innovate have supplied a pair of Trailfly Ultra G 280s for one lucky listener. I was thinking about, I wish I had them for the Lakeland 100 this weekend, but I am not going to buy any shoes between now and then. But there is a link in the show notes and on our website too. And on the website, click on the competition button and that will take you to the Innovate page. And yeah, do what you need to do over there. But for the rest of July, so you've still got a few days to do this, we have a Patreon only giveaway. Like we said before, you're the people that make this all possible. So Eddie and I and the brands that support us would like to say a big thanks. Also, we know some listeners aren't on Facebook, so it's just a way of supporting those people who keep missing out. Nice and simple, this one. All you need to do is be a paid up member or Patreon. The end of July, jump over to Patreon if you're not already a member and check it out. Yeah, like I say, a few days left, 12 o'clock on July the 31st. He'll
spin the wheel and I'll be in my bikini and high heels next to you. Spin the wheel, spin the wheel. That could send YouTube through the roof, that one, Gary.
We will break the internet.
What a thought. Gary, you know you're going to feel the love this weekend at Lakeland 100 with Gary super fans. They're going to be out in force. Gary, love you, Gary.
I'm going to be a snood dealer. I'm taking some snoods over. People have been DMing me.
I love the idea of the snood, just chucking them out in the crowd. Here's Emma Run Summit. She's a big Gary fan too. Best podcast ever. I absolutely love Gary and Eddie and the podcast of great banter and amazing guests, useful advice and inspiring stories. What more could you want? Even though I dislike tea, coffee all the way. Oh, Emma, this was going so well. I love the trail, so it's all good. I run solo 99% of the time, so having Gary and Eddie keep me company is ace. Keep up the awesome work. Thank you, Emma, for your great review. Shame about the tea.
Oh, that is not even that's not even a name, is it?
J2 diggity diggity duck duck diggity diggity tie tie. What?
Yes.
Clearly easy to read.
That's your Apple podcast handle. But the lovely review is the best company on a solo long run. So happy that I discovered you guys. You are both clearly nuts, but I love sharing my headspace with you on my solo runs. Everyone's doing solo runs. I'm a very slow trail runner. Didn't start until my 40s, but thanks to my wonderful supportive running group led by the Here Runner, I've now signed up for my first marathon, which I will attempt on my actual 50th birthday in Amsterdam. Awesome. That sounds fantastic. So until then, I am depending on you guys to keep chatting on as I plod along on my training routes. I signed up to Patreon too. Oh, thank you very much for that. Just for £3 a month. There's not many things you can buy for £3 these days, so it feels like a bargain to get so many good tips. But most of all, I love the camaraderie.
I love that. I don't think we've had a review that's like spoken about running on your own and having the company as well as eloquently as that. So we love being in your ears, JD diggity diggity die die die. Right, Gary, we've got Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, start again. Maths is not my strong point. Wednesday, Thursday, 3 days, 3 days left, 3 days left. Do you feel sick?
No, I think I said at the beginning of the show, I'm super busy and I'm really stressed out because I've got a lot to do. I'm either going to have a really angry customer or I'm going to be really tired before.
Do they listen to the podcast? Have you asked them?
Thanks. Hopefully not. But not a lot of running because I'm mega busy at work. But so yesterday I did just a 5-6 miles easy with Rex. Today I did my 2 mile with Rex, then I did 2 mile it's on the trails, but it was marathon effort, marathon paced effort, then 2 mile cool down. Might not run tomorrow, maybe Thursday, do a couple of miles with some strides, nothing. Yeah, just pretty easy. Fingers crossed I get some good sleep. That's what I'm hoping for. Because, yeah, we all know, you know, the closer the race, you stay up thinking about how the race is going to go. So if I can just be distracted, although work is busy, it is a bit of a welcome distraction that that is occupying my mind. Hostel for me Thursday night, early kit check, then pitch a tent and relax for the day, handing out snoods, hopefully bumping dealing. Some listeners.
Just a bit of light dealing.
But yeah, apart from that.
Race goals then. Let's put it out there, Gary. Come on, put it on the podcast.
Well, you know, I've said loads of times I'd love to get sub 24 myself or Robbo to get the category win. Obviously, I want to do myself, but if I'm not going to do it, I'd love to for Neil to be on the podium. Who knows who else has torn the line? I feel a bit embarrassed when I say that because I literally have no idea who is on the start line in that age group. I get a bit upset. I just don't want, I just feel like I'm going to be chasing a ghost. And it's, I don't know. I've invested so much in this for quite a few years. So we'll see. I got a goal 24 hours. Hopefully I'm just not chasing this. Like I say, these ghosts, I'm not too sure what I mean by that, but yeah, fingers crossed.
What a process you've had though, training for it. So I think it's really important to reflect on that when you do feel like I've put so much into it, but it's given you so much joy, the training and the focus for this and everything. Like if we look back like the last year and you've introduced the gym work, you've introduced like a lot the last few weeks of treadmill work, you've done all these build-up races with Robbo, you know you've really increased your confidence and everything, just the way you talk about how you you've had our successful Bob Gwern round, but your confidence on the trail, your confidence in your body as well. So even if then the race doesn't turn out to be, you know, what we think we deserve or what perhaps your athletic ability is as a person, you're like a different person from when we first started the podcast as a runner and on the trails. And
thanks, Eddie.
So though sometimes we don't get the result that we deserve, the way that you've prepared for it is so admirable. And you've put your heart and soul into it, but I think you've probably inspired mainly most of the people on that start line as well will have listened to you and be inspired by how you juggle everything and how you handle yourself. And as everyone says, Gary, Eddie, you're all the chat and Gary's the nicest guy. So I think you can hold on to that.
That's lovely to
and
see.
Really, if it all goes tits up, it's going to be the best podcast episode as you cry and I look awkward because it's about that's time the tables turn.
I can't believe I nearly cried there. That took me, me by surprise. I just don't want to. I remember last year and even the 2017 when I did it, you know, it's all funny. It's all chatty. You put out your goals. And then when it's not going well, like last year especially, I internalized it all and it was a real... It was real rubbish, 30 miles, if I'm honest. And even if it's not going well, I hope I can be in a happier place in my head.
Take it back. Take a moment. Tap along. Have a boiled sweet.
Yeah, keep your cherry active.
And have some cherry
I'll be high active. As a kite on a protein rebel.
And remember, the biggest thing to remember is that really nobody cares. Everybody loves you for who you are.
Well, this is it. You know,
everybody just wants to see you. You know, no one wants to see Gary being hard on himself, even when it's gone wrong. They want to see, you know, Gary problem solving and looking after himself, being kind to your future self. But if it all goes wrong, I'm really excited to hear all about it as well, because I've shared some very low points in this podcast. Yeah. So really it's time now.
It's my turn.
You'll be fine. You'll be fab. Put your big boy pants on. Don't worry about it, Petal.
That's enough about me. What about your week?
Quiet. I haven't actually run yet. It's Tuesday. I kind of feel I can, but I've got the kids and it's busy. So I just had a total rest day yesterday. I did a half an hour aqua jog. Love my aqua jogging. Ooh. I know I'm blessed. Hashtag blessed. Because I've got access that I can just go into an outdoor pool. So it's lovely mountains all around me too.
Oh my goodness.
So I can just jog up and down. And I had quite sore. My shins were a little bit sore. So I just did really nice, like jogging with the water. So that felt really good. And then I'm going to jump on my bike tonight and just flush out the legs. And then I'll just do some light jogging. Just have a real, real easy week this week and just get moving again on the trails checklist. Always really now super cautious as I head into my mid 40s about recovery and when I ask my body tough stuff, even though, you know, it wasn't super tough, but still, you know, I want to recover and it just takes that a few days longer. And when the kids are on holiday and stuff and you're busy, you're trying to juggle everything. I haven't got the sleep. Yeah. I haven't got the Netflix time. Being kind to my future self, Gary. Being kind to my future self.
It's so important. And I appreciate it. As you say, as you get older, it plays such a bigger part in the whole training, the holistic approach to training. Yeah. Take your recovery seriously. Okay, let's wrap this up before I fall to pieces completely. Hopefully you enjoyed the show. And if you did, please take a look at Patreon. Loads of great deals over there. You save a few quid. We can put some money in the meter too. Thanks to our partners and Patreons, new and old. Be kind to your future self. Don't forget to like, subscribe, follow, and give us a share. Yeah, tell your mates too.
Stay safe on the trails. Run rise, run well. Don't overdo it. Recover sensibly, listen to your body as well, of course, as your fave podcast. Make sure you refuel with your favorite brew. My name is Sutton.
And I'm Gary Thwaites.
And that was episode 32 of Tea and Trails. And we're not stopping there. If you're running the Lakeland 50, running the Lakeland 100, if you're out crewing, you're supporting, you're volunteering this week, any race, best of luck to you, but special best of luck to you, Gazza.
Thanks, Eddie.
You got this.
We need a Yuri Geller dot on the screen. But yeah, you know, I hope you all get exactly what you want out of the race, whether it's the 50 or the 100. No DNFs, please. Say hello if you see me. I love a selfie. Always there.
Oh, my God.
Enjoy those miles. You know, I'm seeing this because I remember coming out of Mardale and I was not enjoying those miles. But yeah, even as you're coming out of Mardale head, please enjoy those miles.
Is that not the worst part of the whole course? Take a smile, drink your Coke, get up that
hill. It's such a privilege. And they pimped up the medals this year. Finishers get a buckle. We're going for buckles in 2023.
I look forward to that, being on a belt around your waist when I next see you.
So fingers crossed we'll all be swaggering around Coniston on Sunday with a heavy flex.
With a heavy crotch. On that note, see you later.
See ya.